Parts of the Southeast Asian nation of Malaysia are as modern as any part of the industrialized world, but rural villages and ancient ways drew the National Geographic radio expedition team to the northern Malaysian state of Kedah in this special surround sound presentation. NPR's Michael Sullivan follows the dangerous rituals of the honey hunters of Malaysia.
Kedah province is the rice bowl of Malaysia, and while agriculture is king, Kedah also boasts a rich and diverse rainforest near the Thai border. A world of tigers, elephants, and 4-foot-long iguanas, and bright purple dragonflies that dart from plant to plant in the dense undergrowth that lines the trail. It's a 30-minute hike through palms and hardwoods and clinging underbrush. Passing the honey hunter's base camp, just a tarp strung among several trees with a cooking fire off to one side, comes a warning from our guide, Dr. Mahathir Mardan.
The next 15 minutes, we will be climbing from the base camp to the B3. It's going to be a steep climb, many rocks around, and you have to watch every step along the way because some pebbles, loose pebbles, and this will take a lot of energy for the climb.
Mahathir is a bee specialist at the University Putra, Malaysia, who's been observing the honey hunting ritual here for nearly 20 years. In a small clearing on the hillside, the honey tree soars more than 220 feet into the air, like some giant multi-finned rocket reaching for the sky. The first branch on its straight, smooth gray trunk, a full 120 feet from the ground.
Any tree that is chosen by the Dosara to be the nesting site is called a Tualang tree. Doesn't matter what species it is. But this particular tree is Compassia excelsa. It is one of the tallest species in the forest.
And hanging underneath the branches, giant honeycombs covered with bees. More than 80 colonies, or nearly 5 million Asiatic honeybees, one of the world's most aggressive species, on one single tree. Steve Bookman is an entomologist at the Carl Hayden Bee Research Center in Tucson.
These honeybees are very, very different from European honeybees. Why? They're not sedentary. They're migratory, just like monarch butterflies migrate, or certain birds. They migrate over hundreds and hundreds of miles. We don't know where they come from, and we don't know where they go.
But the honey hunters will tell you where the bees came from in the beginning, says Bookman. It's part of an ancient legend that shapes their ritual harvesting, the story of Hitamanis.
Hitamanis was a young woman who fell in love with the sultan's son. He returned her love, but they could not marry. She was a commoner. And Hitamanis and her handmaidens, known as the Dayang, fled from the palace. The furious sultan's men chased her. They hurled spears, a sharp metal-tipped spear, pierced her heart. She fell to the ground, and the miraculous part was that she and her handmaidens were magically turned into giant honeybees, the Tualang bees of these forests, and they flew away to live in the treetops from then on.
Since then, it has been taboo for honey hunters to use metal knives to cut the massive combs from the tree limbs or metal buckets for lowering the bounty from above.
Got it.
The leader of this group of honey hunters is a man in his late 70s called Pa Te. A farmer, traditional healer, and imam in the village mosque, Pa Te demands respect and inspires confidence. An hour or so after sunset, Pa Te offers a short prayer before the ascent. He has been climbing this tree for nearly 40 years, but eyesight failing has decided that another family member should learn to lead. On this climb, he is paired with his 20-year-old grandson, Nizam, whom Pa Te has chosen to replace him.
My grandfather is already old. My elder brother is not going to do it. So who's going to? It's a family tradition. So to me, it is my interest and also family pride to carry on.
Pa Te and Nizam race up the massive Tualang tree like spiders, using saplings nailed to the trunk for a ladder. Tied to Nizam's leg by a length of rope is the torch they will use to coax the bees from their hives. It glows faintly from the end, like an inverted cigarette moving up the tree. Pate and Nizam confer frequently as they climb. Having reached the first branch, they decide it requires a bridge to enable them to reach the colonies farther out. Satisfied, Pate ventures out onto the branch and is at the first comb. The bees are already disturbed by his presence. He speaks gently, respectfully to calm them, laughing good-naturedly, also part of the ritual, as he is stung. Reaching underneath the branch, he begins stroking the comb with a smoldering torch to encourage the bees to leave. This comb is big, more than 5 feet long, and chock full of bees. Mahadir Mardan guesses more than 80,000. As they come pouring out of the colony, Pakte wraps the torch several times against the branch. The glowing embers float gently to the ground like lazy shooting stars, and, attracted by the light they believe to be the threat to their colony, the angry bees chase the embers to the ground. They are encouraged to do so by a member of Pate's band who stands at the base of the tree, serenading the bees with the call that's echoed throughout this forest for centuries. Hitamanis, bees come down with the falling stars, the man cajoles. Hitamanis, bees come down gracefully. Once on the ground, in the dark, the bees cannot find their way back to the colony until first light. Once the bees have left the colony, Pate and Nizam cut away the comb with a knife made from the shoulder blade of a cow. The comb is then folded to trap the honey inside and lowered to the ground in a cowhide bucket. The entire operation has taken less than 30 minutes. Through the night, Pate and Nizam will move to other branches, harvesting more than a dozen colonies before daybreak. It is dangerous work, this high-wire act in the jungle, not particularly profitable, and fewer people seem willing to do it. Dr. Mahadir Mardan says 20% of the honey hunters in this region have quit in the last decade for more lucrative and safer work on the ground. It is economic opportunity, he says, not deforestation or agriculture, that is the biggest threat here, and he worries about what would be lost if the honey hunters were to leave for good.
For anyone to be able to do honey hunting, he must understand the forest, the way to the forest, the plants, the animals. They have to know about the insects, about the ecosystem. So it is that knowledge which is not documented that would die. But if we let this to continue, there's a chance for us being researchers to document or maybe encode some of this knowledge about the man, the beast, and the rainforest.
That is one reason Mahadir Mardan comes back year after year for the honey harvest. For Pate, the explanation is more ephemeral.
Once I finish with this bee tree, I start daydreaming about what's going to be next year, what branch I want to climb, whether the bees are there. It's like an addiction for me. I don't know exactly why the bees come here every year. I just know I'll be here when they do.
This is Michael Sullivan, NPR News, Northern Kedah Province, Malaysia.